Hey, everybody. Are you ready to have another great conversation about the orderly conversation and all things business communication?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. I just want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dale and Greg from Turpin Communication, and I'm Barbara, and we have Kevin at the controls.
Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
He speaks.
So in the last couple of episodes, we've been talking about some advanced applications of the orderly conversation techniques and the things that Turpin is focused on. And I want to switch us up in a slightly different direction this time. My social media feed is full of memes about bad meetings. And I've even coached somebody who went to a three-hour meeting at her place of work to talk about why nobody gets work done because they're always in meetings.
Yep.
So it's definitely a thing, which I know you both know. And what I'd like to do is hear some of your thoughts on effective meeting culture. And I'm saying culture because it's not just a series of tactics and techniques. It's really about sort of company-wide expectations.
Right. And that's why we're considering this an advanced application of the orderly conversation, because you would think that a meeting would be like very, very generic baseline stuff. But as it happens, they are incredibly expensive to the business, right? And so we need to fix this problem because, you know, the meme that is in my head right now is the coffee cup that says, I survived another meeting that should have been an email. And our businesses deserve something better than that. So anyway, you're right. It is very much about shifting culture and leadership setting expectations for how meetings should be conducted and who are we going to invite to the meeting and how are we going to conduct the meeting so that the business at hand gets done. Because so often people walk away from meetings having no idea, A, why they were in the room, or B, what they were supposed to accomplish. And so they don't get something accomplished. And then they have to go to another meeting where the same thing happens again and then again and again.
It's sort of related to what we were talking about earlier, about framing presentations, about how you need to be flexible with that, and think about when you're in a meeting delivering a presentation, because presentations don't exist alone, they're always part of a meeting, thinking about how what just happened at that meeting affects what you're going to say in your presentation. I mean, that sort of flexibility, that sort of fitting it into the conversation that's already started is a big takeaway from the presentation skills classes. Yep. But it's certainly applies to meetings because they're always part of a meeting.
I want to, before we get into some of the stories I know that you have to tell, just establish what gets included under the umbrella of a meeting. Dale just pointed out that, you know, presentations and meetings are usually sort of hybrid things that, regardless of what you call it, people are presenting at meetings and having conversations at presentations. Right. So what else do we want to include as we talk and think about meetings?
Yeah, so presentations take place within meetings, as you said, and sometimes they're somewhat formal. Sometimes they're not formal at all. They're just, you know, here, I've got a spreadsheet I'm going to show you.
Dale, tell us about the progress of your project or whatever.
Right. So there is a real problem with how are we defining these things. The English language just does not have enough words to do that. That's one of the frustrations we had when we were writing the orderly conversation, because what's the word for this that doesn't exist? So let's define what a meeting is, and we're going to define it pretty broadly, right? So what we're doing right now, I suppose, could be a meeting. I mean, there are the three of us in this conversation, and we have a support person dealing with the technology as we record this conversation. This is a meeting. And, you know, the typical meeting that people think of probably is, you know, six or eight people sitting around a boardroom with an agenda and just sort of slogging through the information. But now with technology, where it is, meetings are conducted entirely by phone, virtually. So they're dialing into some sort of a shared platform, GoToMeeting or, you know, JoinMe or any of those. And then there's video, of course, that comes into it sometimes through Zoom or, again, GoToMeeting, join me. And so I think that we can define just about any time a group of two or more people get together to talk about the business and some business that needs to be moved forward, regardless of how it's conducted, we can call that a meeting. A one-on-one performance review is a meeting.
Mm-hmm. A phone conversation is a meeting.
Right. Yeah. Right. Sometimes they're scheduled and sometimes they're not. It, you know, sometimes they take place around the water cooler, and that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that.
Or if you're Aaron Sorkin while walking rapidly down a hallway.
Right.
Absolutely. Right. As you are running to your next meeting, you're having a meeting exactly. About the meeting that just took place.
What do they call it? Petaconferencing? So, Greg, I know you have a couple of stories about client interactions that's centered on effective meeting behavior for the people running the meeting, but also for the attendees. And I think, you know, there's an interesting parallel with what we talk about with presentations where it's a back and forth, and you can't only serve the ball. You have to be ready to return serve as well.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever that story is that you have in mind, why don't you lay it on us?
Yeah, so there are two stories. I think I will start with the one that happened more recently, and that will lead us to the next one. So one of our buyers, this is a new client, she contacted us because she had seen us online, and we seemed to be the only company that was talking about shifting the culture of an organization through the way you conduct meetings. So she was the head of marketing for a very big company with brands that we all use on a daily basis. And she's responsible for probably, I'm making this up, but I'm guessing 2 or 3 dozen different brands. And so she has a staff of a lot of people working on those brands. And then she also has relationships with many, many different agencies across the country. And so she has these what are called experience meetings. And so she's bringing all these people into the room at one time. So let's imagine about 50 really high-level marketing people who are responsible for iconic brands. That's an expensive meeting with 50 of those people,
yeah.
In it, right? And so the goal of these meetings is to get all of those best brains into the room so they can have really interesting and creative conversations about where a particular brand might go in 2 or 3 or 4 years. So the stakes are really high. They've got to get this stuff right. The problem that she was experiencing after having done many, many of these is that no one was paying attention to anyone else in the room. So you've got really high-level people presenting their idea, and they think it's the best idea ever, and then they're presenting that idea to a group of people that aren't looking at them. And then they sit down, and then the next agency comes up and they present their idea, and maybe one of the marketing people under this organization is presenting. But the problem, they weren't building off of one another. And so the buyer's fear was that these brands were going to become stagnant because of a lack of creativity and cohesiveness. So she called us up and she said, I want to change the culture. Can you help us do that? And the answer was yes. So the plan that we came up with is they were rolling out some new expectations, some new software, some new processes. So she said, I'm going to have this group of people in the room. Why don't you come in? Why don't you observe as they're working with me, as I'm presenting this information to them, and then you can have the next couple of hours. Well, that was a great plan because I was able to observe all of this naughty behavior. I mean, this buyer is, I don't even know how many thousands of dollars, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars, that meeting was costing her, and no one was paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So my job became very easy, which was just to shine a light on what just happened. And what was really interesting, I said, you know, my expectation of my portion of today's meeting, while I walk you through what I think are best practices for attending and leading meetings, is that you actually participate with me right now. That means I need your attention up here. I need the devices put down. And we are going to accept the fact that we are in this meeting to conduct a certain amount of business because this person right here is paying us to do that. And what was so interesting to me is that they all did it. It was as they didn't do it begrudgingly. They did it because I had set the expectations
mm-hmm.
that is how we are going to conduct this piece of business. So the buyer then, I think she really understood that it was her responsibility to set expectations. That much is clear, but it's everybody's responsibility to deliver against those expectations. So we're changing culture by changing meeting behavior. Now, the other story I have is for, this was a financial company, and it was a sales force of several people, maybe a dozen and a half of people or so. And they had been all located in a very small town in California. And this particular leader wanted them to be out in the regions. So he wanted to rehire people out countrywide so that people could actually be selling in the regions that they lived. Made sense. But the problem then became, how are these people going to conduct meetings with one another because they're doing it virtually? Mm-hmm. So they called us in, and we put together a plan to conduct some training virtually, where it was basically setting expectations. It wasn't just how to use the technology. It was how do you engage people through a camera, and how do you pay attention and chime in and blah, blah, blah. But we were going through a planning portion with this buyer, and he said, stop. There's something that's coming into my mind, and I just need to talk about it. We are changing culture here. Yes, we are. That's exactly what we're doing. And so I think that it was easier for him to get his head around what does the future look like in terms of virtual meetings, because now we're changing culture. So it was his responsibility then to set those expectations and to reinforce that over time.
We talk a lot about the person running the meeting and the person running the meeting's responsibilities. And this, by talking about the cultural shift, it gives us a way to talk about what's on the receiving end of that. Because obviously, if we're working in an effective meetings class, our goal is to make sure that you are facilitating a meeting in such a way that people want to participate in it. And you're giving them every opportunity to do that. But you still may fail, though, if you have somebody in the room who refuses to play along. And so I think that by making it a broader focus, by saying, okay, you're all... Well, it goes back to being paid to be there. You're being paid to be there. It is your job now to be attentive and responsive. I think it helps both the facilitator and the other people at the meeting to know what to expect and give them a way of looking at the meeting.
Yes, and it's changed a little bit the flavor of our workshops, because we used to focus exclusively on the person who was doing the presenting or leading the meeting. And now it's, we're all in this. So you need to practice being present in the workshop, not as well as back in the business. And we always start, as you all know, we start with our workshops with how do you want to be perceived? And they say approachable, in it, likable, you know, whatever that is, professional. That applies to when you're participating and when you're listening, not just when you're the one leading the session, right? So huge change. People have not thought of it this way at all, I think.
And the other effect of that is that people, when they're watching the video of themselves running a meeting and somebody in that meeting, in that class, is not paying attention, the fact that they didn't notice that is really important, because if they didn't notice it, because sometimes you're like, I had no idea that person was checking out. And we don't know what that person was doing sitting there in the chair, but we do know that the facilitator wasn't aware of what was going on, which is a good learning.
Yeah, it really is.
I don't know if you remember this, but way back in our first conversation, you know, episode one, The Return or whatever, we talked about how people find meetings to be among the most frustrating things they have to do at work. And what I'm finding interesting about this conversation is that they are not at all primed to take any responsibility for that if it's not their meeting.
Right.
Which is interesting, because I think to put it out there, you know, well, I hate meetings and they're so frustrating. Well, how do you behave in them?
Right.
Is an interesting question to have asked. And I don't think enough people are challenged in that way right now in a general sense. I mean, to my mind, that should be put out in a general business magazine that's not even about training and development. What is your role in making sure that the meetings you have to sit through go well?
Yeah, yeah. And that leads me to this tool that we developed, which we called the Ground Rules for Effective Meetings. And it is not put down your phones and, you know, pay attention and take notes. It's not anything like that. It's about the behaviors that are expected on both sides of the coin when you go. And a lot of it really boils down to, well, we talk about there being two levels of success in any communication event. There's the, you know, do you reach your goal? But there's also, are you creating the conditions for a fruitful conversation to take place? And are you participating wholly? And this infographic, or whatever we would call this thing, addresses both sides. And a lot of it boils down to trust. Are the other people going to trust me to run an effective meeting? And will they, well, can I trust them to participate fully? It goes both ways. Why we haven't been talking about this since the dawn of time, I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's a give and take. I mean, you want me to pay attention, make this relevant for me.
Right.
But you know, if I make this relevant for you, you will participate. And so it's not, it's an agreement, as, or what did you call it, a ground rules.
So if I'm a team leader, if I am some sort of functional leader, maybe not in charge of changing the culture for the whole company, what can I do for my little world to make meetings better?
Hire us.
Okay, Greg. Other than that.
No, I think you need to take the time to think about the meeting in advance so that you do frame it up well and that you set your expectations and make it you want someone to participate in the meeting, give them a reason for it, give them a business reason for it, a personal reason for it, and make sure that that is always reinforced. It doesn't take long, and it's probably always going to be sort of a given, but I think that talking about how you want the process to feel and run is important.
But it has to be consistent time after time after time.
Right.
People need to know, you know, what is the expectation every single time. You and I were leading a class just the other day, a couple weeks ago, on effective meetings, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he said, I want my meetings to have a brand. When people come to my meetings, I want them to know this is how we're going to conduct business. And I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
And by the end of the workshop, he felt like he had gotten there, which I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we were talking a bit ago, a couple conversations ago about effective SMEs, one of the things that you put in the book is how to help an L&D professional argue up the ladder about the need for this kind of training. So I'm going to ask you to do a parallel thing here. It's my boss. It's my team leader who is bad at meetings right now. Help me make the argument for instituting some of these cultural changes up the ladder.
I have one way of answering that. I don't know what your way would be. But
go for it.
Sure.
Sure.
It's money. Think about how expensive these meetings are when it's a free-for-all.
Yeah. How much are people making per hour, and how much is that hour of having seven people in the room costing you?
Yeah. Actually, I wrote a blog article about that where I did – now, I'm not good at math, but I think the math was, you know, using round numbers, it was – obscenely expensive for just a single meeting. And I know we talked about this in a previous episode of the podcast, but manufacturing will squeeze every ounce of inefficiency out of the process because it helps the bottom line. And for some reason, communication does not get that same treatment. It just seems like the cost of doing business. And it really doesn't make any sense to me. And as those words are coming out of my mouth, I'm also thinking of the internal meetings that we all have. I mean, we have a staff meeting and that's pretty regimented and we get through that as quickly as we can. But then there are other meetings where, you know, we might as well be lollygagging around out in the meadow picking flowers because we're not getting work done. So even
which is not a thing we actually do.
Although it sounds pretty inviting right now, actually.
If you remember, Greg is the one who needs to work on his patience. I think that was the, just wanted to throw that out. But I would answer that question slightly differently. I think the money thing is important, but it goes back to if you're talking to your boss or your boss's boss, pointing out, asking the question, how do you want people to feel at work? Do you want them to feel necessary and important and heard? Do you want this to be a pleasant place to work? You might want to think about how you're managing these meetings because, of course, it's connected to turnover, it's connected to productivity and all of that stuff. And I don't think that, the higher up you go, the more power you have in an organization, the sloppier you can be because nobody will call you on it if the meeting is bad. Mm-hmm. But I think the precedent setting and the tone and the culture setting that happens when you really focus on making the process as pleasant as possible and as efficient as possible is important.
Well, I think too about relationships and careers. So you want to be the type of person that other people want to work with. And since meetings are such an important part of the work that we do, it's important to show up. It's mm-hmm. important to be the person other people want to work with. And those are the people who get promotions and who, you know, climb the ladder. I mean, there are outliers and exceptions for sure. And we've seen a lot of that. But I do think that, I mean, life would be so much more pleasant for people if everybody showed up.
In that same engagement, Greg, that you were talking about a couple of minutes ago, where you and I, a few weeks ago, were doing an effective meetings engagement, one of our learners was a project manager, which was a role that this person was already not super comfortable with, working with a bunch of people who had never really been managed before in quite this way. And they were the tech experts, and our learner was not. And even something like setting expectations, laying out an agenda, acknowledging what's currently going on and what had happened before, for this person felt revolutionary.
It did.
Because as she said to me, it's not so much about what we will be talking about. It's that I have deliberately excluded all the things we're not going to be talking about at this particular meeting, which is going to keep it clean and streamlined and moving forward.
And if I remember correctly, she was working on a monster of a project with a just ridiculous moving parts.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. In fact, she said to me once, toward the end of the engagement, aren't you glad you're not me? And I had to acknowledge that, yes, indeed I was. So is there anything else that you would want to leave our listeners with in terms of things they can do in the immediate moment, the next time there's a meeting, the next time they lead a meeting, just to get started? Because they're not going to introduce a cultural change this week, but they can certainly start one cell at a time, making some productive changes. So what should they do at their next meeting?
I'd go back to framing it up, what you were just talking about, what just happened before, what are we doing now, why are we doing it now? But I also think it's, in terms of tone, simple stuff like set the tone you want to have for the meeting. Don't be perhaps slightly more enthusiastic than you might want to be at the beginning of this. And I think that if you take responsibility for the atmosphere in the room, it'll help. It'll help a lot. I don't know. Do you agree with that, Greg?
I do. And this experience flashed into my head. I think it was the two of us, we were delivering this training, and one of the guys in this session, and he was toward the end of his career, he was pretty tightly wound, and he somehow went to the wrong training location. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And so he was 15, 20 minutes late, and he wanted everybody to know when he got in the room how upset he was about having had the wrong address. And he flopped all of his stuff down on the training table and sat in the chair and nearly knocked himself backwards because, it was just so much energy and frustration that he was feeling. And it changed the tone of the room for about 20 seconds. And they were like, okay, that's done. And Dale just picked back up where we were. But a single event can really change the tone of a meeting unintentionally. And you were skilled at bringing it back. But that could have just turned that entire training into a nightmare.
Well, I think we've just had an effective meeting about effective meetings, which is very meta. Thank you both so much for another great conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Barbara.